All right, so we're diving deep today, and I think this one's going to be, well, it's a bit of a tangled web. We're talking redistricting and politics and the Voting Rights Act all kind of jammed together.
Yeah, it's definitely a dense one.
League of United Latin American Citizens versus Perry, 2006.
Huge case.
Oh yeah. I mean, still shapes how we think about voting rights, gerrymandering, all that.
Absolutely. And for anyone, especially like law students listening, this case, it's like a crash course in statutory interpretation, constitutional law, all that good
Yeah,
stuff.
world stuff.
Right. And we'll unpack how the court dealt with Texas trying to redraw its districts and how that bumped right into like protecting Latino voters,
Yeah.
and we'll get into how divided the justices were about like partisan gerrymandering itself, the whole concept.
Yeah, because that's a beast of a topic. So, okay, LULACV Perry. Not just the legal what's what, but the impact, on the ground.
Right, exactly.
So, scene setting. What happened? What led up to this whole showdown at the Supreme Court?
Okay, so rewind to 2003. Texas legislature, Republicans are in charge, and they decide, hey, let's redraw these congressional districts.
Right.
But here's the thing, it wasn't just the normal, like, oh, it's after the census, gotta redistrict. They were replacing a map the courts had ordered just 2 years earlier in 2001.
So they were pretty eager to get back in there and make some changes.
Yeah, and it was pretty clear that they wanted more Republican seats in Congress. I mean, that was the goal. And that led to some pretty big changes in a bunch of districts. But one that really became a flashpoint was District 23, South and West
Through
Texas.
23. Yeah, what happened there?
Big changes. So before, like under that court-ordered map, the Latino voting age population was pretty high, around 57.5%, which, meant Latino voters had a real shot at electing their choice for representative.
Right.
But this 2003 plan, it slashed that percentage down to just 46.
Ah, well.
Yeah. Huge difference. Totally changed the dynamics.
So a district where Latino voters had a real voice,
Yeah.
suddenly it's much harder for them to make their votes count.
Exactly. And it wasn't just messing with District 23. They also created this whole new district, District 25.
Okay, District 25. What was the plan there?
The idea on paper was to make another majority Latino district. But the way they drew it was, well, it was questionable. They took all these geographically scattered Latino communities, like parts of Austin, and then communities way down by the Mexican border and just like mashed them together.
And those are very different places,
Yeah.
right? Different needs, different everything.
Totally. Different histories, different priorities, different what you call communities of interest.
Right. Yeah. So you've got District 23, which had a strong Latino voice, getting chopped up,
Yeah.
and you've got this new District 25, which, yeah, it's majority Latino, but it's like they just like threw a bunch of different communities in a blender.
Yeah.
I can see why Latino voters were upset.
Oh, absolutely. Their argument was basically, look, this whole redistricting thing, especially what you did to District 23, it's diluting our voting power, which, they said was a violation of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which, that's a part that says you can't do stuff that messes with people's right to vote based on their race or color.
Right, Section 2. And I think they also said that the whole plan was like straight up partisan gerrymandering. Like the whole
Yeah.
thing was just designed to give Republicans an unfair advantage.
Exactly. So there you have it, the setup, the background, the conflict. Now we get into the legal nitty-gritty.
Yeah, let's get into the weeds a bit.
Yeah.
So, what were the big legal questions the Supreme Court had to figure out? And how did they answer them?
Okay, so three main questions. One, was this Texas plan an unconstitutional partisan gerrymander? Two, did it break Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act by hurting Latino voters in District 23? And three, did making District 25 somehow fix any problems they caused in 23?
So basically, did they break the law? And if so, did they also try to cover it up?
Pretty much. And their answers, well, on that first question, the partisan gerrymandering one, they dodged it a bit.
Dodged it.
Yeah, Justice Kennedy, his opinion ended up being the deciding one, and he said basically, look, there's no like clear rule book for judging these partisan gerrymandering claims.
So they didn't really say whether partisan gerrymandering was okay or not. They just kind of said, we don't know how to judge this yet.
Yeah, right. They basically said, we're not equipped to deal with this right now.
Okay, so they punted on the big question. But what about the Voting Rights Act stuff? District 23, District 25, all that.
That's where they actually made some pretty big decisions. They said, yeah, redrawing District 23, that did violate Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Yeah. They agreed with the plaintiffs that it weakened the power of Latino voters. But, and this is a big but, they also said that making District 25 didn't fix the problem.
So they broke the law, but their attempted fix didn't count.
Right.
Okay, I definitely want to dig into that Section 2 ruling more. And you mentioned the Jingles test. What's that all about, and how did it play into this case?
Okay, so Section 2, super important for protecting minority voters. Basically, it says you can't have any rules or practices that make it harder for people to vote because of their race or color. And when you're talking about redistricting, the court uses this thing called the Jingles test to see if someone violated Section 2. It comes from a case called Thornburg v. Jingles.
Jingles test. Got it.
Yeah.
And there are specific things you have to prove to show that Section 2 was violated, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Three things, usually. First, the minority group, they have to be big enough and live close enough together to be a majority in one district. Second, they have to usually vote for the same candidates, like they're politically united. And third, the majority group has to vote together enough to usually beat the candidate the minority group wants.
Okay, so if all three of those things are true, then it's a pretty good sign that Section 2 is violated.
Right. So let's think about District 23 before the Republicans redrew it. Did the Latino voters there meet those three conditions?
Well, I'm guessing they did, since the court said there was a violation.
Exactly. The court said the Latino voters in the old District 23, they checked all the boxes. They were a big group, lived close together, could have been a majority. They usually voted for the same candidates, and white voters often voted as a bloc against those candidates. So the third condition was met, too. That's why the old District 23 was what's called a Latino Opportunity District. A place where they actually had a chance to elect who they wanted.
And that's where that quote comes in, right? The one about how the state took away the Latinos' opportunity because Latinos were about to exercise it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about numbers. It was about taking away their power.
Exactly. The court saw that breaking up that group of Latino voters, it basically meant they couldn't elect their preferred candidates anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a straight-up violation of Section 2.
And then there's District 25. You said the court didn't think it fixed the problem. Why not? It was designed to be a majority Latino district, right?
Yeah. But remember that first part of the Jingles test about being geographically compact, a real community of interest?
Right, right.
District 25 might have had the numbers, but it was sprawled all over the place. It lumped together Latino communities that were miles apart, like in Austin and on the border. They might have been Latino, but they didn't necessarily have the same concerns or want the same things from their representatives.
So you can't just draw lines on a map and call it a community.
Right. The court basically said just having a majority-minority district isn't enough. It has to be a real community with shared interests that can actually act together politically.
Okay, so that makes sense. It's not just about demographics. It's about whether those people can actually function as a political unit.
Exactly.
So let's shift gears a bit and talk about that other big argument in this case, the partisan gerrymandering claim. What was the argument there?
Okay, so the plaintiffs, they said the 2003 plan was all about getting as many Republicans elected as possible. That was the goal. And they didn't care about anything else like fairness or representing the people. They said that kind of extreme gerrymandering violated the Constitution, specifically the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Okay, so basically they were saying, look, Republicans rigged the system to keep themselves in power, and that's not how democracy is supposed to work.
Right. And as we said before, the court really struggled with this. They couldn't agree on what to do about it.
Why was it so hard for them to come to a decision?
Well, the big problem was they didn't have a clear way to decide when gerrymandering becomes unconstitutional. Like, how much is too much? How do you measure it? They all had different ideas about what the court's role should be in this kind of situation.
So some justices thought the court should step in and say, nope, this is too much gerrymandering, it's not fair, and others thought the court should stay out of it altogether.
Exactly. And Justice Kennedy, he kind of landed in the middle. He said, look, maybe there are some extreme cases where partisan gerrymandering would be unconstitutional, but we don't have a way to figure that out yet.
So he left the door open a crack for future cases.
Yeah, he didn't completely rule it out, but he said, for now, we can't really judge this.
Okay, so what did the other justices think? I'm guessing there were some strong opinions on this.
Oh, yeah. Justices Stevens and Breyer, they were pretty clear. They said extreme partisan gerrymandering, that violates the Equal Protection Clause, period. They said that when a state legislature is just trying to help their own party and hurt the other party, it goes against the whole idea of fair elections and representative democracy.
So they were saying that gerrymandering to that extent is basically cheating.
Right. But then you had Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Scalia. They thought the courts shouldn't be involved in these kinds of cases at all. They said it's a political issue, not a legal one, and judges shouldn't be meddling.
Wow. So very different views on how to handle this.
Yeah, it shows you how divided they were on this issue.
Okay, so we talked about some important quotes earlier. One was about how Texas took away Latino voters' opportunity just as they were about to exercise it.
Yeah.
What other quotes are important for understanding this case?
Another big one is about what are called influence districts. The court said influence districts aren't required under Section 2, meaning the Voting Rights Act doesn't say you have to create districts where a minority group can influence the outcome. What it really cares about is making sure they can actually elect the preferred candidates in districts where they're a big enough group and politically united. So just because a redistricting plan might give minority voters some influence in some districts, it doesn't mean it's okay if it also breaks up existing districts where they could actually win elections.
Right. So it's about the right to elect, not just the right to influence.
Exactly.
So taking a step back, what are the big takeaways from LULA C. v. Perry? What does it tell us about redistricting and voting rights?
I think this case really shows the tension between politics and civil rights when it comes to redistricting. States, yeah, they have political goals, but they can't just ignore the Voting Rights Act and hurt minority voters to get what they want. And the fact that the court struggled so much with the partisan gerrymandering question shows how hard it is to set clear rules about how much politics is too much in redistricting.
So they knew something was wrong, but they didn't know what to do about it.
Pretty much.
So what's the legacy of LULA C. v. Perry? What impact did it have?
Well, it definitely clarified things about how the Voting Rights Act protects Latino voters and minority voters in general when states redraw their districts. It said that districts can't just be majority-minority on paper. They have to be real communities that can act together politically. And like we said, it left the door open for future challenges to partisan gerrymandering, even though the court still hasn't figured out a clear way to judge those claims. That took until Rucho v. Common Cause in 2019, where they basically said, we're not touching partisan gerrymandering, it's a political issue.
So LULA C. v. Perry, it was a step forward, but it didn't solve everything.
Right. Redistricting is still a huge battleground, and LULAC reminds us that race and politics are always going to be tangled up in it, and the courts are still trying to figure out how to make sure everyone gets fair representation.
Well, this has been a fascinating, maybe a little frustrating, but definitely fascinating deep dive into LULA C. v. Perry. Thanks for walking us through it.
No problem. Glad to be here.
To everyone listening, if you want to learn more about this stuff, definitely check out Shelby County v. Holder. That's a big one about the Voting Rights Act. And of course, Rucho v. Common Cause, the one we mentioned about partisan gerrymandering. They're all part of this big ongoing story about voting rights.
Huh.
And the fight over how we draw our districts and who gets to vote fairly, that's not going away. So keep thinking about it. Keep learning about it. It matters.